We are on the air.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
Where we talk about books.
We love books.
Oh my God.
So much.
Love them.
Yeah. So here's who we are. I'm Ben. Ben Roman, even. That's a name, not a statement of what I've been up to. And I have no credentials whatsoever to talk about books other than I read them all the time.
Well, that's a credential.
That is a credential.
I'm Gabs Roman, Ben's sister, for all you people out there, we're related. And I guess my credential to talk about books is that I have an English degree, but I think more importantly is I also really like to read books.
All the time. As you'll hear at the end of this podcast, we are both reading multiple books on top of the book we are talking about.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
So I guess right out of the chute here, I better give you the spoiler warning, and that is that we will spoil everything.
Every last thing.
We don't really care if that spoils it for you or not. We're here to talk about the book in its entirety, not to review it and leave it open-ended so you can go find out what happens on your own.
Right. We're going to talk about characters, themes, endings, twists, the whole gamut. So if you're the sort of person who think spoilers are the devil, then you probably want to turn this off until you finish reading the book.
Yes, do not let us ruin it for you if that ruins it for you. For me, it doesn't ruin it. That's the other reason. If I know everything, I'll read it anyway. If it's well written, I'll enjoy it. Mm-hmm. So, I guess with that out of the way, you might want to know that what we're about to talk about is Lord of the Flies by William Golding. If you attended public school in the United States, you have read this book. Even if you don't think you have read this book.
Yeah, everyone in the world, I feel like, has read this book. But again, we're coming from the United States point of view. Just a refresher, pig head covered in flies, boys dying on an island, and sucks to your asthmar.
And fire.
So if that doesn't ring any bells, then maybe you did escape school without having read the book.
And if you did, I just want to tell you, sucks to your asthmar.
Sucks to your asthmar. So the reason we chose this book to talk about is because pretty much everyone has to read it in school. And so, you know, we want to discuss classics, see whether or not they're still relevant, see whether or not they're interesting to read outside the context of here's a symbol, here's a theme.
Part of our purpose here is to be educational, cover some classics, and do so in a way that is maybe actually interesting. You don't usually get to hear the words classic literature and fuck in the same sentence, but here is your opportunity. Also, by the way, we will use what is commonly referred to as adult language in this podcast.
Yeah, so if you don't like it, fuck you. I'm kidding.
Yeah, and your stupid kids who are listening with you.
What I actually meant was sucks to your asthmar.
Sucks to your asthmar.
Which, by the way, will be said all the time. Okay, so I guess we'll just kind of start with a general overview of the book. When we are trying to decide on a genre for you guys, we couldn't really come up with one.
Yeah, there are obviously story types that this is related to. You know, there are plenty of stories about people being stranded on an island. Several of them are even considered classics. Some of them we may even talk about at some point in the future.
Maybe.
But what do you really call that? There's, I mean, survivalist.
Yeah.
Quasi post-apocalyptic, almost dystopian, I don't know what to call it.
Yeah, but they're also usually a look into human nature and how messed up people actually are, so.
At its broadest stroke, call it literary fiction, get on with your life. If it's very important to you that you pigeonhole it, there's the hole to put it in. To pigeon it in?
To pigeon it in.
No, why do they call it a pigeonhole? Maybe we'll make that a segment sometime.
Pigeons live in holes. I don't know.
Not as far as I know.
So, to sum the plot up in a sentence, boys crash land on an island, and after attempting to live peacefully together, they go insane.
They fail.
Yeah. Big time.
There's fire and death and blood. And yeah, well, let's get into the let's just get into it. So they apparently they crash land, possibly were shot down. There are some Cold War overtones that get mentioned a couple times. It's not really a major plot point, but it is set in the 1950s. It was written in 1954. And they talk about maybe they saw something and there were flames on the plane. And one of the boys, his dad's a naval officer, and, you know, it could be a war thing. And later, actually, someone does, in fact, get shot down over their island, but we'll get into that in a few minutes.
Yeah, so we kind of have these boys running around who think that there might be something going on in the outside world. We don't actually know where they are. We don't know if they did get shot down. We don't know if they will be rescued. It seems actually kind of unlikely.
We know they're somewhere in the middle of the Pacific Ocean.
Right. I think they do say that at one point. And even though you have a band of boys, we actually never know how big it is. Mm. Most of the focus is on kind of a set number of the older characters, even though, you know, older being 12.
Being relative, yeah. 12 instead of 6.
But I think you could say that pretty safely, the protagonist of the book is Ralph.
It would be really hard to argue otherwise. Most of the story is told through Ralph's eyes, more or less. Here, you describe the tense, English major.
It's past tense. That's not difficult.
That's too hard for me.
The point of view, I would say most of the time, is third person close, mostly focusing around Ralph. Because we do get some of his thoughts and processes, and whenever characters, you know, like Piggy talk, we just know what Ralph thinks mostly about what Piggy is saying, not really about where Piggy's coming from, except through what he says. Once or twice we get a glimpse of Jack pig hunting. Once or twice we get a glimpse of Simon mind-tripping to the Lord of the Flies. And then there's even a little portion that's an objective narrator saying, this is something the boys don't know. But I would say for the most part, none of those changes are too jarring, and it does center around Ralph, who, you know, for all of being a 12-year-old boy, he's a pretty deep and
serious character. Yeah, he's almost a tiny adult in a lot of ways. I mean, he has his boyish nature. He's definitely kind of portrayed as a boy's boy. And when they're all having fun and doing boy things like running and shouting and picking on the nerdy kid, he definitely participates. But he does have these ideas about leadership and about how they need to run their society if they're going to survive long enough to get rescued. And he really even thinks of it more or less in those terms.
Yeah, he is elected chief at the beginning, which actually does show you that element of his boyishness, is the fact that he and Piggy find the conch, and all of a sudden, like, everyone's just kind of entranced by this kid who's, you know, not afraid to talk to anyone, is just standing there, and they're like, yeah, he'll be our chief. But he never says, okay, I'm going to become an absolute dictator, which, you know, if a little boy gets some power, you might think, oh, he might run wild with it, like Jack, which we will talk about. But Ralph tries really hard to be fair to everyone and give everyone a chance to speak and figure out what's best for the community, if you will.
Yeah, and they're not necessarily working in a straight democracy, let's take a vote every time, but he definitely considers all of the input before he makes his decisions, which for a 12-year-old boy is pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, and he doesn't let himself get carried away all the time. When everyone's freaking out about, oh, we just set a fire and we're going hunting. I mean, Ralph is susceptible to that, but at the same time, he's also able to step back and say, well, let's prioritize what's important.
Yeah, he's one of the probably three characters in the book who will actually step back and look at what's really going on and be introspective, along with Simon, who I don't think we've mentioned yet, and Piggy, who we've mentioned a couple times and we'll discuss in depth in just a moment. But so there's a point, actually, somewhere around the middle of the book where Ralph suddenly has this epiphany, for lack of a better word. But he realizes, oh, I'm thinking. I'm like Piggy. No one else here really thinks. Well, gosh, that's kind of lonely.
Right. He starts considering what's going on the island and what their future will be. And all of a sudden, he's like, not a little boy anymore, basically. And he goes and actually seeks Piggy out because who else thinks like them? And, I mean, that's...
He's actually going to listen to what Piggy has to say a little bit as well, which certainly no one else is doing.
And which he doesn't even do at the beginning of the book.
Oh, definitely not. That's where Sucks to Your Asmar comes from, as it so happens.
Yeah, so Piggy, might as well talk about him. We never actually learn his real name. At the beginning of the book, he and Ralph are the first two to find each other, or as far as we know, since we're following Ralph around, and Piggy confides... That's what everyone used to call him, and Ralph immediately jumps on it, laughing, calling him Piggy.
He's a pink, fat kid. It's apparently pretty hard to miss the connection, and it's kind of funny because it's kind of true and kind of cruel in the way that kids frequently are.
Yeah. And the thing that just makes it the most awful is that Piggy... Like we said, is the other thinking person on the island, and he's that from the beginning, because he hasn't been able to participate in all this play, sporty stuff that all the other boys do, because of his asthma, or as we're assuming he pronounces it...
Asmar.
Asmar. He's probably had to sit around and read books and start thinking early.
Yeah, you know, I have a lot of empathy for the Piggy character because, well, we never even get to learn what the poor guy's real name is.
It sucks.
Which is why we like him and we are calling him Piggy. But, I mean, he's the nerdy kid. He's a little bit on the outside. Well, this will shock all of you, I'm sure, but welcome to my entire circle of friends from, you know, up through high school, certainly. And I know a lot of people like this character who read a lot you know, play lots of video games, which in 1954 wasn't really an option, but if it had been, I'm sure he would have been one of them. And, you know, even the wearing the glasses and the being kind of pudgy and the other being an object of ridicule frequently, but luckily for me, I was in large public schools where there were lots of nerdy kids who could be friends with each other, even if they were outside from the Ralphs and the Jacks of the world.
Right, and I think the thing that just makes Piggy the most depressing for me is the fact that he is the voice of reason, and people just keep shouting him down and shouting him down, because unlike, you know, if they were on England, and let's say they all grow up and Piggy gets to become a statesman, and goes and argues with adults in a, I don't know, orderly fashion, whatever you call that, they do shout each other down, but... They all get a say. No one's going to tell them, shut up, Piggy, in Parliament.
Right.
But on this island where it becomes the strongest is going to be who's in charge, Piggy is just... His reason and his grown-upness have no place there.
Right. I mean, Piggy is the representative of civilization as far as the boys go, because looking into the future, he's obviously the lawyer-politician type who... argues reasonably, thinks things through, or at least the ideal lawyer-statesman type.
Right.
I'm not sure everyone would describe politicians that way, necessarily. But, yeah, I mean, he's obviously, you know, nerds grow up, and they tend to run society. The strongest don't survive when civilization is in place, which really gets into the theme of the book quite a bit, actually.
Right. And just one more note about Piggy is when we talk about the conch shell, which is what they use to call all their assemblies. As far as I can tell, it's a shell you can blow into, and then it acts kind of like a horn where it produces a noise and can summon people. I was always thinking the Horn of Gondor. But Piggy's the one who discovers the conch, and the conch actually becomes the way in which they try to run their little pseudo-democracy. So you could even argue that the character who represents civilization is what finds something on the island to tie them to civilization.
He's so civilized, that his civilization rubs off on the conch shell.
Yeah.
Want to call a meeting? Blow on the conch. Want to talk during the meeting? Hold the conch. It's a symbol of authority that they don't actually have present. And so, I mean, that gets, like I was just saying a moment ago, that really gets into the theme of the book, which is this civilization versus barbarism. And right. We'll make sure we work in a couple more characters along the way, but let's get it out there since we're talking about Piggy. And so at the beginning, they form kind of a society of sorts with a meeting with an elected chief, even though they don't really run things very parliamentary after that. But it, as we mentioned, everyone gets their say. And that goes into decline over the course of the book.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually almost impressive that they do manage to hold together for as long as they do, because we don't know how long they've been there. After the initial meeting and the talk about building the shelters, the narrative skips forward a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
We
know their clothes are all shredded, and like the clothing in the best condition is stiff and hopelessly stained and probably about to fall apart.
Right. Their hair's long enough to tie back now. I was actually surprised that Piggy hadn't lost weight.
Yeah, that never comes up.
Didn't really come up. Most of them are tanned, sunburned. But they manage to kind of hold together this little society for as long as they can, until Jack gets it into his head that, well, he's the hunter. He's the one providing food. So he can really kind of stage a coup, almost like the Roman army, you know, overthrowing an emperor. And
the hunters really are the military wing of the government. Mm-hmm. And he does not initially, it doesn't so much feel like he's seizing power as much as, well, holy cow, we're all kids. And this dude wants to have a bunch of fun and eat meat all the time and dance around a fire and paint his face, and that's fun, though it quickly turns into a very despotic, autocratic type of government where his word is law, and he has, well, really one toady who is willing to carry that to extremes. Let's talk about Jack for a minute.
Okay. Well, Jack, and I'll put this out here, I really don't like him. He's a bastard. And I was about to call him a ginger, but that's not really an insult. But he is one. So I just want
it's coincidental.
I just want all you redheads out there to know that I actually have nothing against redheads. I just hate Jack.
Yeah, you'll get to learn all about that when we talk about Ron Weasley at some unspecified future date.
I love that man. Yeah, so Jack's thing, are actually the first glimpse we get of him in the book, is he's leading this remains of his choir group across the beach. And they're all still wearing their black choir robes with their black caps on. And, I mean, he is leading them in a march, even though some of them are threatening to pass out and fall over.
One of them does pass out and fall over.
Simon!
And
he's immediately a challenge to Ralph's authority, although the two of them get along at first. But he is trying to get himself elected just as much at the first moments of the book. And, I mean, the first time you really see him, he is in complete control of that choir.
Yeah, I mean, they are very much a militaristic organization even before they get named as the hunters, and therefore the ones with the weapons experience and the ability to prowl through the jungle silently.
Yes.
And just kind of become a fairly violent little group, especially once they get their first taste of blood. And Ralph never really asked to have authority. He just kind of got it.
Mm-hmm.
And once he had it, he was trying to do the best he could. So I think it's probably pretty obvious from context at this point that I kind of like Ralph.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. He's doing the best he can. He even learns to think, which is always, you know, plus several gold stars in my book. And Jack, on the other hand, wants the authority right from the beginning. He has some. He wants more. And you never really get to see any of the story through his eyes, but it really seems from the way he's described that he wants it to have it.
Well, I think the turning point for Jack is at the beginning. they end up running into a pig on the island, and they capture it, and Jack has the chance to swing down with his knife and slit open its throat, and he hesitates because he's probably never slaughtered an animal before. I mean, it runs away, and he spends the next several pages trying to make up for it, saying, next time I'll get her, I won't hesitate next time. And the next time he does run into a pig, he slashes that shit open, and he leads the kids in a chant of, you know, kill the pig, slit her throat, spill her blood.
Yep.
And it's almost like from that moment on, he has this bloodlust added to his search for power, which can only be a dangerous...
Historically, that's a bad combination.
Yes.
And it was on this little island as much as it would be in a larger society.
Yeah, you almost imagine Jack as, like, the president of a fraternity gone bad.
That's more or less how I described him in some text messaging we were doing recently, which actually Jack was characterized as a bros bro and also as, quote, a fuck.
Yes, a straight up fuck. Really not a fan of Jack. But Jack is there because he's the opposite of Piggy, the civilizing thinking force. And, you know, if those two had known each other on England, Jack would definitely have bullied Piggy relentlessly, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. So,
if this story was happening 10 years later in a college and was a comedy, which this is so not what this story is, but Jack would be the president of, like, the evil fraternity, and Ralph would be, you know, the vice president of the good fraternity, and Piggy would be the nerdy kid who was always getting picked on by the evil fraternity.
Right, and whose life's goal is to get laid, probably.
Probably.
In a college comedy Lord of the Flies, which is so wrong. Should never happen.
This is a weird tangent we've gone down here.
So maybe to put all of that, and then Simon, well, Simon might be a female character.
In a sort of kind of way. I kept expecting Simon to reveal that he was actually a girl. I don't really know why, but maybe it's because he was quiet and he liked to think, and I watched...
Gender stereotypes!
Way too much anime where...
I mean, it does bring up this issue here where it's not necessarily a bad thing that there are no girls in the book, but there are no girls in the book. And it does kind of make you wonder... Why didn't William Golding include girls in the book? Does he think they won't go savage like boys? Does he think they would have not been players? What's the deal going on?
For that matter, is the reader. What would the average reader expect to happen if there had been girls there as well?
I know that myself, growing up with brothers and being a tomboy, that if I had been theoretically dropped on an island with some other little girls and boys... I would have probably joined in that, let's run around and hunt and build fires. I wouldn't have been all daintily sitting on the beach like, oh no, I'll prepare dinner for all you men folk.
I tend to agree. I don't think that it would have affected their descent into barbarism too severely. Though, the one thing I would speculate about is maybe if there'd been a couple of girls there who... were not tomboys and were traditional 1950s raised type of girls, maybe they would have been responsible enough to maintain the fire.
You know, I feel like they might have been trying to hold onto their properness longer, but I bet even they would have. I mean, it's finally a chance to not be a proper 1950s girl.
That's true, which would have been very appealing, I would imagine.
Yeah, so... something to think about there. But, you know, speaking of Simon potentially being a girl, which is not the case.
Which is not at all the case.
It's actually kind of weird to think about, but we were talking about a college sitcom. So let's talk a little bit about Simon.
Simon's kind of he is the interesting character, actually.
Yes.
Because the others, the big three of Ralph, Jack, and Piggy have such... clearly defined personalities and goals. And then here's Simon, who, when the schism happens later in the book, he's definitely on the side of civilization, but he's never been a full participant in the social part of it, the political part of their society. He tends to come along. Now, when they're exploring the island...
Yes, he was one of the...
Simon was original. One of the three, mm-hmm. along with Jack and Ralph.
Yes.
He has a lot of good ideas at meetings that he never quite gets out of himself because he's afraid of speaking in front of people.
Right. And one of the first moments we see him, he falls down in a faint or a fit. We don't really know quite what's wrong with him. Jack says, oh, that happens fairly often. I think at one point Golding describes him as having this sparkle in his eye that Ralph mistakes for mischief. I don't really know what that's about.
Maybe it's the sparkle and glint of intelligence, because Simon is definitely the other character who thinks.
And helps and wants...
He's a little of an odd duck. He runs off on his own and has a little thicket he hides out in on a regular uh-huh. basis to do some thinking and perhaps to have some of these episodes that he has.
He talks to a pig head covered in flies.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, the balls tripping part. So, you know, again, Simon's not a girl because he's tripping balls. You can't do that for a girl, right?
Whatever. You're full of it.
I'm full of it.
Right, so Simon has this episode, and the other thing about him is he has these intelligent ideas where he's... The pig is maybe kind of speaking what's on Simon's mind, since it can be pretty safely assumed that a pig, dead pig head covered in flies is not actually talking to him.
There's no way it speaks English, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's on an island.
I mean, like, come on.
That's just ridiculous.
It'd be some weird Polynesian thing.
Right. But the pig head predicts that he's going to be done in if he's not willing to give in to the fun.
Fun in this case, meaning the painting yourself, dancing around the fire, and coincidentally killing pigs and beasts.
And people,
yeah. As later.
Right. But the other insight that Simon makes that I really thought was interesting, which he's like never quite able to get out... Like you said, he's afraid to speak in the circle, because he's kind of like Ralph in that he thinks and he wants to do good and he's helpful, but he just can never command the respect that he needs to. And when they're all discussing whether or not there's a beast, Simon tries to tell them, well, maybe there's not an actual monster, but maybe the beast is us. And the kids do not get that.
Yeah, you can safely assume that kind of statement will go over the head of certainly all the little ones.
Yes.
Those of single-digit age who just want to play. Mm-hmm. And most of the older boys are not quite ready for that idea either. Though Ralph and Piggy, I would say, definitely come around to that.
Yes.
Piggy much sooner.
Yes.
Ralph, maybe not until he's hiding, desperately trying not to be killed by... savages.
Yes.
Maybe this would be a good time to talk a little bit about the beast.
Okay. So the beast actually shows up, well, not a physical beast, but the idea of the beast shows up pretty much immediately. The first night they're there and they have a council talk. You already have the little ones, which is the narrative's, term for all the 6-7-year-old kids.
Yes, for the unspecified number of small children who really don't affect the story or the decision making, but who are just kind of there.
Some of them get names, but not really. So, first night, little kids are afraid of the dark, which makes sense. We have some of these weird Cold War overtones. Maybe some of them are vaguely aware, you know, back home that there's some kind of dark force out there trying to get them at home, and now they're in the wilderness, so it's even less, you know, they don't have mom or dad to protect them. And we get the appearance of the little boy with the mulberry colored birthmark.
Yeah, let's see. Is he the one who actually brings up the beast first?
Yes.
It wasn't Percy, okay. Well, I just read the book, but what do I know? yeah, there's a little boy with a mulberry colored birthmark that apparently covers most of one side of his face, so it's pretty noticeable, pretty hard to miss. And he says, I was out in the dark, and I saw shapes in the darkness, and maybe there's a beastie.
A beastie, yeah. Yes,
initially it was a beastie, and he was terrified because he's... you know, 6, and he thinks he sees monsters in the jungle, which, to be honest, if I was out in the jungle in the dark, I would think I saw monsters too.
Right.
And I'm 29.
And as far as we can tell through the descriptions, the jungle brush is super dense and thick, and running through it causes all sorts of plants to scratch you. So if you're scared in the jungle, you think you see dark shapes at night, and then you try to run through the dark, and you have all these vines and creepers snagging you naturally, you could interpret that as something grabbing at you and clawing at you pretty easily, I think.
Yeah, I don't know how you wouldn't if you were a panicked child, actually.
Yes. So this concern almost immediately gets overwritten when the boys come up with the idea of creating a fire.
Which conveniently is also a way of fighting off the darkness a bit. So maybe that's a little bit of it too.
Maybe it is a little related.
Certainly what the fire comes to mean, which is rescue, the hope of regaining civilization.
Yes.
If you want to, well, if, which we do really, want to use the idea of the beast as being this other and this force of darkness, well, here's fire, which is literally a source of light.
Right.
And that gives you a sort of defense. And when the schism happens, a lot of that is really related to the fire.
Yes.
As it so happens.
Who has the fire has the power, although they each want the fire for different reasons. And Ralph, in the second half of the book, continually forgets why he wanted the fire in the first place as he sinks more and more into this island living. And Piggy has to keep reminding him that they want the fire so that a ship could see the smoke and rescue them.
Yeah, and so this fire, which they decide they need to have so they have a good chance of getting rescued, also in, is this in the, one of the first two chapters, I mean, it's right at the beginning of the book, is also the first sign of perhaps the eventual descent into madness and barbarism. Because they go to build this fire, and they get so excited for fire, the boys are running all over the island and grabbing anything that looks burnable and throwing it in a heap. And they light it up. And what happens? Well, half of the island burns down, basically.
Right. It all crashes around in the woods and sets a bunch of trees on fire. And actually, something that I just connected, if you want to be like super English majory about it, is the way they light the fire is through Piggy's glasses. So again, if we have fire as being hope of civilization, warding off the darkness, you again have Piggy being the entire reason that's possible.
With his glasses.
Piggy! Civilization!
I'm almost getting angry with this book at this point, because I enjoyed reading the book as a high school student. Did not enjoy studying the book as a high school student. We talked constantly about symbols, and anything related to Piggy especially was a symbol of civilization. And I bet you, because I had a list of about 30 items that I had to fill out. And what's this a symbol for? And I guarantee the fire was on that list, though I don't remember specifically. But now that I'm here talking about it, reading it as an older person, I totally think all of these things are symbols now, and I'm really mad.
What? Literature?
Curse you.
Piggy. Ruining everything. And all so, the fun.
I know. And so Mr. No Fun Piggy, after the fire, points out to Ralph, hey, so that fire was really fun and all, but fire's not that helpful for a signal. We're going to need smoke. Also, what happened to that kid with the birthmark?
Right, like, they have this conversation about the beastie, and several hours later, kid's missing, never shows up again. We have no idea what happened to him.
We assume he burned to death.
Yes, that was my assumption as well, which is a very cheerful assumption. I mean, you can pretty much assume anytime anything is happening that various little ones are probably being killed in the crossfire. Because we never actually know how many of them there are.
Yeah, we know that there, I mean, like, logically speaking, there probably needs to be a minimum of a half dozen of them. But on the upper end, there could be 1,000 of them, for all I know. I mean, it's a little unreasonable. But if there were as many as 50, I wouldn't be shocked.
Right. And I was thinking kind of around 20, 30, enough that it's hard to keep track of them.
Right, enough that when Piggy tries to, when one nerdy kid with myopia tries to count them, it's hard to do.
Yes, and his asthma.
And his asthma.
So we have this initial idea of the beast, and people continue to be afraid of it. They continue to keep the fire up. I don't remember what point in the book it was. I keep feeling like I want to describe everything as halfway through, and I don't think this is halfway through.
A lot of stuff happened halfway
through. Yes. But at some point, one night, when they're all asleep, we get the narrator giving us this little tidbit that none of the other kids know. There's some kind of aerial battle going on above the island. I think he describes it as, you know, miles in the air.
Yes.
It just kind of looks like flashes of light. And then some plane gets shot down. We have a figure in a parachute come out of the plane and land on the top of the mountain by where the kids maintain the fire. But he's definitely dead. Either from impact or from getting shot out of his plane. This is not a living man. But his parachute gets stuck on the rocks in a way that when the wind blows, it fills the parachute up and causes him to kind of sit up. And then when the wind blows the other direction, the parachute empties of air and he slouches forward again. So it looks like he could even be moving of his own accord.
Yeah, and if I'm on an island in the middle of nowhere and I think there might be some shadowy monster out there, and I see that from a distance or in the dark, then that's going to scare the hell out of me.
Yes.
And I'm not even 12.
Again, grown man, terrified of
Pooja. I'm scared of everything, so I might be a bad example.
But Sam and Eric wake up, see this, freak out, and run back to confirm that, yes, there is, in fact, a beast. And this is where a lot of it starts getting dangerous for the kids.
Yeah, because now they officially think there's a beast, so their paranoia has just been ramped up to level 10, which is another Cold War allegory.
Actually, yes.
Think about it.
Why?
Why? Stop doing this to me. Can I go back and rewrite my freshman English paper?
Yeah. Stop representing things, but
that's right.
How dare you?
And so... Yeah, at this point, we're pretty obviously in full-fledged descent mode. And interestingly, the fire going out for the first time and Jack's hunting party making their first kill happened at the same time. Yes.
And the other thing that you learn, when they let the fire go out, because Jack takes the fire guardians to come hunt with him, at the same time they let that fire go out, a ship is actually seen on the horizon.
Oh, yeah. They actually could have gotten rescued. That's the kicker.
So, not only do you have this, you know, savage hunting thing going on, not that hunting is necessarily savage when it's for survival, but these kids with their bloodlust, the fire going out, missing rescue, and Ralph flips a shit.
Yeah, so now you have full-fledged conflict between your civilization represented by the fire and your barbarism represented by the hunters and the fun, really, because that's what they keep emphasizing. Oh man, you should have seen it. You should have been there. It was so awesome. And they're like doing a little dance and a little mime play and
creepy chant.
And a chant.
But we get this idea that it's not all fun because we do have a character who gets to momentarily act as the pig in the situation.
Yes.
Robert?
It was Robert. I believe. This scene is the reason he got to have a name, I think.
Yes, Robert. He acts as the pig so that they can recreate their hunting and their killing of the pig. And as they go on, they start getting more and more harsh with Robert, and he even cries out a little bit that they're hurting him, that he's scared, and they don't really seem that they're going to be stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, they barely do. It goes from, hey, here's what you're doing to the pig, to they're actually hitting him. And pretty soon, Jack is sitting on his back with his knife at this boy's throat.
Right. And then he doesn't end up slitting his throat, which...
which is, I guess, a point in his favor.
Jack did not brutally murder someone, so he's a good guy.
Have we already descended to the point in the story where we're giving a character credit for not murdering someone? I'm not sure that's a getting credit moment.
Not a great, not really a sign of a If you're describing someone's life as, well, they never murdered anybody, that's not...
he was a good man.
He might have been an alcoholic and beat his wife, but he never killed anybody, so...
He never murdered anyone.
He was all right. Right, but anyway, this is this first sign we get that the hunting's not just fun. There is also this savage element of it where they actually enjoy the kill.
Yeah, right? That definitely.
And I mean, Robert is freaked out by that.
Though it doesn't stop him from joining Jack's tribe later.
Yeah, or the murder circle.
I guess it's about time we get to the murder circle.
Let's talk about the murder circle. So Simon, as we discussed before, who is a thinking person, who's worried that if he doesn't want to have fun, they'll kill him, which ends up being true, who is able to reasonably say, there's probably not a beast, but we should go look anyway, because...
What else are we going to do? Right? What else is there to do, I think, is the quote.
Yeah, you might as well go check it out. You gotta make sure. And so he has this weird little mind trip moment with the pig first.
Yeah, I'm not a medical expert, and I didn't even bother to ask the internet about this, but the scene that's described where he's tripping sure sounds a lot to me like a grand mal seizure.
I was thinking some kind of epilepsy or seizure as well. And we can kind of assume that's what triggers it, but, you know, then Simon's also, he's a little strange, say the other boys.
Yes.
A little off. And, I mean, let's face it, if you're hallucinating pig's heads talking to you, that's...
then you're a little off, even if there are electrical impulses firing through your brain in really abnormal ways.
He also seems to be the one who names the pig the Lord of the Flies, at least in his thoughts.
It's only referred to as Lord of the Flies in his trip.
In the narration during the trip,
right? Yeah, so.
Which is the title of the book.
In case you don't remember what we're talking about, spoiler alert, the title
spoiler
of the book
alert.
Is Lord of the Flies.
So you can only think to mean, well, the boys left the Lord of the Flies head there in order to hopefully ward off the beast, a sacrifice, if you will. And now this sacrifice is giving advice to Simon that he'd better have fun or they're going to do him in. So you can kind of think of that as, well, why would that... I mean, besides the fact that it's a kind of a bitching awesome title.
It is a really awesome title.
You can think of it in terms of the Lord of the Flies is actually kind of this symbol. Oh, no! Of savagery.
So, Simon climbs high enough up the mountain, actually all the way to the top.
He finds
the dead parachutist and realizes what's going on and knows that it's really important that he tells the others because this idea of the beast is wreaking havoc with the society they're trying to form on the island. And so he basically punch a drunk from having had a major seizure and then exerting himself physically, tripping balls, and actually vomiting up the entire contents of his stomach because of the, you know, putrefying corpse in a jumpsuit.
Yes.
So after all of this, he staggers down to the beach where Jack and his hunters, this is post-schism, we should probably mention the schism at some point, but Jack and his hunters are throwing a party to try to attract the boys that didn't come with them earlier when they decided to leave the main group. And they're kind of dancing in this circle, and they're, you know, full of meat, and they are feeling good because they just made a kill, and hey, we can fight this beast. We can be okay. Jack will show us how to be all
right. Right.
And all of a sudden, this, like, half-crazed, exhausted figure stumbles into the middle of their dance.
And it's dark out, and so they don't even necessarily realize at first that it's a kid.
And it's time to kill the beast. Spill his blood.
Yep, cut his throat.
Do him in.
And so they, in their craze, start beating the hell out of Simon, kind of in the way they were doing to Robert earlier, except that with much more intent this time.
Yeah, and this time they don't stop.
Yeah, and it's implied that at some point they realize that it is Simon, who in the entire time is shouting about the beast in the parachute, and they can hear, it says, the beast is shouting about a parachute.
Yes.
But they don't know what's going on, so they just keep attacking him. And they leave his body dead on shore.
Yeah.
After having beaten him to death.
And he washes away, and he's gone.
Yes.
Which leaves the thinking characters to acknowledge what has happened. And even, actually, the twins, Sam and Eric, who are referred to as one word.
Sam and Eric.
Even they are having to acknowledge it to some degree. So Ralph and Piggy are having a conversation, and Piggy, who once again, the representative of civilization, is saying, we just killed a guy.
Yes.
That's bad. And the others are trying to rationalize what happened.
It was an accident. We didn't realize what was going on.
We weren't really involved. We were on the outside of the circle.
Mm-hmm. And then they kind of realize, oh, no, that was straight up murder.
Yeah.
There's no rationale for it.
That was bad.
And I think Piggy even calls it murder, and Ralph
he does.
Cringes and says, no, no, an accident. They didn't mean to. And Ralph eventually comes to terms with the fact that it was murder.
It was murder.
Yes. So once Piggy has brought up this idea of murder, he brings up this new idea to Ralph that he never has before. Something else that Ralph has to come to terms with. Because they're thinking about capitulating, maybe they will join the tribe, maybe they can find ways to make amends. And Piggy says, Ralph, don't go and join them. Jack and Roger hate me. And this is the first time he's used this term, hate me.
Yes.
You get the idea that they do. Their bullying is not funny from the beginning, but you can write it off as 12-year-old boys being jackasses.
Yeah, and that's mostly what it feels like. There's not a lot of hateful, harmful intent in it up to this point.
Yeah, at first. And once Piggy says that, Ralph is thinking they hate him. And Piggy basically says, if you join them and you're not standing, you know, if you're not protecting me, they're going to do me in. He realizes what's actually going on.
And he realizes it ahead of Ralph realizing it, which as the group started to split apart, Jack had on a couple of occasions said, oh, well, you want to go see what Piggy has to say. You just love that guy, don't you? Ralph was going, he's a person who's here. I want to see what he thinks because he thinks.
Right. And Jack just doesn't get that.
He doesn't want thinking. He wants fun. He wants fun.
Supposedly.
For certain values of the word fun.
Yes. And this is right around the time that Ralph starts realizing that there's something really dangerous going on here. That Jack and his crew aren't just going to go have fun, that they have other intents in mind.
Yeah, I mean, when they go to confront Jack, they arm themselves.
Yes.
Even Piggy gets a spear thrust into his hands. Here, defend yourself. I can't. My glasses are broken. I have one eye. I have asthma. And you're going to have to do this. And they go and confront Jack. And sure enough, Ralph is the only one who really does any confronting. He's the only one who's capable of it, even. Mm-hmm.
So they have to go confront these guys with their spears. Jack set up a system where they check everybody who's coming. And we see that they have this first warning of this boulder propped up on a stick. And at the beginning of the novel, we saw Jack, Ralph, and Simon all pushing a giant boulder off the mountain and screaming for joy. Wizard!
Wizard!
Wacko!
Doink!
Yeah, they love that shit. And now they have one of these other boulders to drop, except that it's in a much more threatening way. As in, you try to get into our camp, and we will drop a boulder on you.
Yeah, guess where the rock falls? Oh, that's the one way in.
Right.
So come on in.
On a ledge. Yeah, it'd be great fun. So we have this battle over the fire going on. Ralph, you know, keeps insisting, we need the fire, but he keeps forgetting why. They realize that four of them, Piggy, Ralph, Sam, and Eric, can't keep the fire going with just the four of them. And over in Jack's camp, they keep going, we're going to steal the fire as a symbol of, you know, power, and they're cooking meat. And they decide the best way to do this, instead of just taking some fire, is to take what can start the fire.
Yeah, I mean, to have their beach party, they stole some fire, but after that, after Simon dies,
yes,
then they're going to steal the fire for good. So they take Piggy's, the remaining lens of Piggy's glasses.
Yes. Yes, Piggy just gets shat upon nonstop.
The whole time.
Poor Piggy.
Poor guy. Well, we have one more episode of that to go.
Yes. So there's a fight in the dark. They take Piggy's glasses. They go to confront them. And Jack says, I want nothing to do with you. And we have Roger manning the boulder. And Roger's character at the beginning of the book was seen throwing stones at a little one on the beach, but he was missing on purpose.
Yeah, something inside of him told him that if he hit the kid with a rock, some teacher was going to step out from behind a tree and yell at him.
Right. Some remaining vestiges of grown-up influence are keeping him from this. And he actually does some of that when they go to visit the boys in their little castle fortress. He starts throwing some pebbles and stones down. Again, missing on purpose, but he seems to be generating this idea that maybe he doesn't have to be missing.
Yeah, and he quickly goes from, I'm going to fire a warning shot with a flare gun, to, I'm just going to go ahead and turn the cannon on you.
Right, and should mention at this point that Piggy has the conch. He's trying to prove civilization applies all over the island. You need to give me my chance to talk. And a lot of the boys are trying to combat it. They'll yell, and then they'll pull back. And then they'll yell again, and then they'll pull back. They can't decide whether or not they want to respect the conch. And they finally just work themselves up into a frenzy, and Roger decides.
He fires at will.
Yeah.
And the rock smacks Piggy, not full on, but it clips him, shatters the shell, and flings him off a cliff, which is what really does him in.
40 feet below into the ocean is what it says.
Yeah.
And his skull smashes open, and pink stuff oozes out.
Yeah.
Some lovely
It was a descriptor. Pretty graphic description.
The conch totally broken, and now we just descend into complete madness.
Yes, with the conch gone, and with Piggy gone, civilization is gone. And so now it is full-scale barbarism. Sam and Eric are tied up and captured and tortured.
Yes.
Ralph is hiding because they... Well, for now he's hiding.
Yes.
He comes to learn that they're planning to hunt him down and kill him. That's their plan. Straight up.
Jack basically can't let any other symbol of power on the island resist him. And they break Sam and Eric by torturing them somehow. And Ralph is never going to give in. So the only way to do it is to kill him.
And so you enter the final chapter of the book, which is a chase.
Yes.
And it's boys in war paint making ululating sounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, this
as far as we can tell,
Hollywood Indian noise, basically.
Yeah.
In fact, they even used the word Indian at some point.
Oh, there. Yeah.
And they worked out a system where by doing this, they know where everyone is, and they are systematically combing the island for him. And he's hiding pretty well. He's pretty resourceful, but
yes.
I guess when he was hiding one of those thickets, did they decide to burn him out, or was that an accident?
Yes, they decided to burn him out. This is where the fire comes back into play. If you remember at the beginning, they accidentally set half the island on fire. Well, at the end, they are purposefully setting the island on fire.
They're now burning the other half of the island down.
Yes. They are going to get Ralph out of there. They don't care how. I think as he's running, Ralph thinks, they're burning down the fruit trees. How are they going to eat tomorrow? Still being, you know, his rational thinking self.
Right.
And the guys are just thinking, kill, 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 murder, death.
Right.
And I mean, it's really intense. Good read that part of the chapter for sure.
Yeah, that's the thriller section.
Yes.
So he comes sprinting down onto the beach, and what's there? It's the Navy.
What the hell?
What? Well, we saw your fire.
Yeah, we saw your smoke.
We thought you might need to be rescued.
And this is the part that I just find
the fucking irony of it.
Insane, because Ralph, the entire book, even when he can't remember, insisting, we need the fire, we need smoke, we need the fire, we need smoke. It's our only chance of rescue. And then at the end, when these boys are trying to hunt him down to kill him, they have no intention of being rescued. They don't care what the fire is for. That's the reason the ship sees them. Because we can assume their little cooking fires are not creating enough smoke to signal a ship. You're burning down a whole thicket of trees. Probably pretty visible.
You can probably see that from a distance, especially across the ocean, which is, last I knew, flat.
Yeah. Because the Earth is flat, right? We saw your fire. We thought we'd come help you out. And it's this totally bizarre, like, you called for civilization once you had completely given up on civilization.
And the fire, the sign of civilization, which is now the destroyer, is the thing that actually saves you and returns civilization.
Yeah. So, what?
And I appreciated that the officer at the end of the book, the naval officer who was talking to Ralph and the kids, was not a cardboard cutout, necessarily.
Yeah.
He was, like, he started in and you thought, oh, he's going to be the clueless adult. Like, oh, you guys are just playing, but, you know, which he does say, oh, you're playing at war, having to have a body count? Yeah, two. And then he has this reaction of, oh, that's the truth.
Yeah, that kid is serious.
Kids have actually died here. And then very quickly goes from, let's banter and reassure the kids, to let's just collect them and get them the hell off this island.
Couldn't you British boys have put on a better show than this? Who is in charge? And Ralph kind of tries to explain it, but he can't do it.
It's not explainable. It's beyond the powers of explanation for a 12-year-old kid who hasn't had any time to think it over yet.
Yes. Also, we should probably mention the body count is likely a lot higher than two, as they're burning down the island, probably killing some of the little ones.
We know it's two. We think it's three.
With the mulberry birthmark.
And it could be 40.
Right.
If there are 1,000 little ones, could be 700. I don't know.
That's ridiculous.
Because we never had a count. I don't know. There could be a million of them. Probably not. The island's probably not that big. Actually, before I hit that, you want to talk about Percy for just a moment?
Sure. So Percy's one of the little ones who actually gets a name, and who's afraid of the beastie. And his appearance in the book, when he's trying to explain this beast creature, the first thing he does is he says his name, his address, and tries to say his telephone number, but is too scared. And you get this feeling that he's kind of trying to hold on to his old life by remembering these rote facts about himself.
Yeah.
I think later on they like catch him muttering his number to himself over and over again on the beach.
Yeah, it becomes kind of a mantra to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then here at the rescue, here he is again, and oh, hey, who are you, little boy? And
he can't even speak.
He's got nothing. He's completely destroyed by this.
He goes up to the officer and tries, I'm Percival, whatever my name is. And
tears. Yeah. Years of therapy.
Yes.
Drinking problem.
All of them. Yeah. I should mention the book ends in every boy on the island breaking down and just sobbing, which actually seems like a pretty reasonable reaction to what just happened. Yes,
whether it's relief or whatever causes that reaction. The officer, however, does, I wanted to point this out, make a reference.
Trivia!
A pretty bad reference, actually, given what he's witnessing, if he's actually read the book he's referencing. But early in the book, this book was also referenced. It's called The Coral Island. Which was written by a Scottish author named R.M. Ballantyne about 100 years earlier. Might have been exactly 100 years earlier.
Woo.
Yeah. So William Golding actually wrote this book partially in response to The Coral Island, which is a book he loved, by the way. Or at least from what I read online. So I'll assume they're right until someone tells me otherwise.
The internet is not lying.
The internet, it's true because it's on the internet. And this is a book about three English teenagers, a little older than the boys in this book, but not a lot. And two of the three happen to be named Ralph and Jack. And they have a series of adventures whereby every group they brush up against, they impart a little bit of civilization to, based on the summary of the book I read on the internet. It's actually been named as one of the best Scottish novels of all time, so I may have to read it at some point. But it's very much the opposite of what happens in this book, and so I think that may have been William Golding throwing a joke at us at the end.
Right. Oh, you're playing, like in the Coral Islands. You're bringing civilization to the island when in fact it is the exact opposite.
Yeah, when in fact you're murdering children and burning it to the ground.
Yes, that's civil.
That sounds fun. You know, if we wanted to break out historian gabs for a minute here, we could make an argument that that is how the English bring civilization.
Well, I guess so, in fact.
How white people in general bring civilization.
I was about to complain about Robinson Crusoe. Oh, look at this quaint way you live. Let's totally destroy it. Now we're civilizing you.
See? It's better. You like it. It's better.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, British people.
Thanks for nothing.
That's at the end when he says, don't you think British boys could manage better? I mean, we were thinking, you could either interpret that as, couldn't white boys put on a better show? You know, you're not savages.
Racist.
Or just the British superiority complex of, well, you're British.
Surely, you're British. Try to have some dignity.
Yeah, exactly. You're not like that fucking Gandhi. Like, that British naval officer would talk like that, but...
I like to think he would.
Idiot. So, that is the end of the book. And then just some comments on the way it's written in general and, like, why your teacher might have you read it for class if you're all bitter about that.
Which I'm not. I'm just bitter that I didn't get it at the time. Because I was stupid and young.
Didn't think the conch was a symbol? I did the conch. Fool.
It can't be anything else.
So one of the things that we like about the book is that it's straightforward, the pacing's good, characterization is good, and there's never these crazy leaps of logic that don't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, the book seems plausible. When you read it, you can imagine a group of 12-year-old boys or children in general on an island and having things more or less go the way they do. In fact, I could easily imagine it not even going as well as it did in the book, because the fact they managed to get some trappings of civilization in place for even a few weeks at all was pretty darn good.
Well, if you have no Ralph and you have no Piggy...
That's true.
How are you gonna... You know, Jack takes power right away, so... Good plot. Straightforward. Pretty easy to read, pretty short.
Clearly a good story to use to teach symbolism.
Yes.
Angry as I am that is true.
And just a good story in general. Mm. One of the things that people have really started glomming onto recently is these sort of tales of civilization going awry. We're starting to love our apocalyptic fiction.
Who does not love a good zombie story?
Right. And in zombie stories, society goes downhill real fast.
Yeah, I mean, every zombie story is basically Lord of the Flies, but with more guts and shotguns.
Yeah. All zombie stories at some level are a study of who we are and our nature and what happens when you take away that thin veneer known as civilization.
Maybe we should have put this in the zombie genre.
Zombies with no zombies.
Zombieless zombies.
Zombieless zombies. And one thing we also think is the other reason it's really relevant to today is just because the Cold War is over doesn't mean we don't have some faceless, nameless enemy out there waiting for us.
I think if you have any awareness of the news and things that public figures say without even getting into specific policy decisions, that the Cold War has been pretty effectively replaced, at least for Americans, by the idea of terror.
Right.
And having security at home from terrorists rather than from communists.
Right, and we were saying, you know, what if this book had been written in 2002 and these boys were afraid of this other darkness? A teacher could really easily say, reaction to 9/11.
Yes, in fact, a teacher probably should say that.
Yes. And that's not to say that some fears aren't on some level justified, but when you create this national air of this other who wants to come in and hurt you, well then when you get kids in a situation where they don't have someone to protect them from what wants to hurt them, then all of a sudden you have beasties.
Yeah, and so it's very relevant from a societal standpoint. And then the slightly less deep relevance of, okay, you're 12 to 14. Here's a book about a bunch of 12-year-old boys stranded on an island and what happens. And I think anyone who's been that age, but especially if you're closer to that age, you can easily put yourself in the position of these characters.
Oh, yeah.
Because Ralph is, though I think he's a somewhat superior strain of humanity in his ability to think and his natural charisma and leadership ability, I still think there's a little bit of the everyman in him, especially since you're getting the story through his eyes.
Right.
And you can go, oh, well, what if I was in that situation? How would I react to that?
Because Piggy's always an outsider, even... I mean, the last line of the book, Ralph finally learns to appreciate Piggy. Part of what messes him up so much is he realizes, I'm alone on this island, and the only other person like me at all was Piggy. Okay, I guess it's not the last sentence, but Ralph wept for the end of innocence, the darkness of man's heart, and the fall through the air of the true wise friend called Piggy. So
Piggy finally, now that he is dead, no longer shat on.
Yeah.
I bet he feels great about
that. I bet he does. I bet Mike feels great about that, because we don't ever fucking learn Piggy's name.
I was about to get to that. Yeah, what is his name? It could be anything. I'm sure it's something stereotypically nerdy, like Myron.
Myron. Sheldon.
Sheldon.
We're just insulting all the Myrons.
I know. Sheldons if your name world. Is Myron or Sheldon, then it's nothing personal.
Hey, you know, Myron Krupnik in the Anastasia Krupnik books. He's a poet, so it's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, there you go.
How do I even remember that guy's name?
I don't know.
So that was our one question we had left is, I actually understand why you never learn Piggy's name, because he is the outsider the entire book.
Right.
But it is frustrating, because how can you not feel bad for that guy?
I don't know. I mean, if you don't feel bad for that guy, then...
you suck.
Maybe you shouldn't be allowed to roam free in society.
Maybe you're a jack.
I'm just going to throw that one out there, yeah. I have one more theory on Piggy, and that's that his name was really badass, and that's why they couldn't bring it up. Like, if he was a gunner or a butch.
Army.
Like a Claudius. There's no way in hell they could give you his real name, because he wouldn't be the outsider. He would be leading that group.
Yeah. They're like, oh, Rock Johnston, yeah! I don't even care anymore.
I don't even care.
So, as you can probably tell, we like the book, and we recommend the book.
I love the book. I liked it a lot better 15 years later. And probably have to email my freshman English teacher at some point and admit that she was right and I was wrong.
Oh, no.
It was a very painful thing for me to do.
And anyone who's currently reading the book for class or about to take a test on it, now you should believe your teacher, too, that the conch is a symbol. Sorry, guys.
Reread it in 10 years and write me. So how would you go about doing that?
Oh, how would you go about writing us?
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Is that a professional segue there?
That was. Like everybody else on the internet who wants to do anything, we do have a website. You can find us at novelideaspodcast.com.
In fact, if you're listening to this anywhere else, then I'll be mildly surprised, unless we're on iTunes by now.
Ooh. If you want to email us, you can send a note to novelideaspodcast@gmail.com, or you can contact us on Twitter at novelideaspod. That's novelideaspod.
There wasn't room for the cast.
Yeah.
It could be podcast or pod, so we went pod.
We went pod.
We encourage you very much to contact us, by the way, if you think there is part of the discussion we completely missed, or we're just not even close to being right about. Or even if you just want to say, wow, you're so good, come teach my class. We'll totally do that.
Yeah, if you have any other books you'd like us to read and talk about, if you just love this book and you think no one ever pays attention to it and it deserves an hour-long podcast, go ahead and you can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com to let us know, or you can drop a note in our suggestions page.
Yeah, so I guess that's pretty close to the end of this.
Yes.
What are... We actually, if we pull aside the curtain for a moment, we're recording this one in advance, and we're just going to throw it on the site sometime when we're on vacation or something. So, no idea what we're doing next week, because I don't know what week this will air. Maybe it never will.
Oh, no.
But
it
what,
will air.
It'll probably air. But what are you reading right now?
Currently, I am reading my nerd book. I guess they're kind of both nerd books.
They're all nerd books.
The first one is a biography of Marie Antoinette by the historian Antonia Fraser. She's also done novels about Henry VIII and Louis XIV. She's a really well-respected historian. And the thing I like about the Marie Antoinette biography is it's really easy to write her off as a frivolous airhead who knows nothing. And I think Fraser does a good idea of humanizing her, which I will be writing about on my blog post for Historical Histrionics. The other book that I'm working on right now is called The Stone Gods. I believe it's Jean Winterston. That's very close. I apologize if I'm getting her name wrong. And it's kind of a science fiction futuristic response to Robinson Crusoe and other travel fiction. So you have humans totally ruined the planet. They're searching for a replacement. And the replacement that they find, they have to tweak it so that they can live there the way they want to. But in doing that, it's implied that they're going to mess everything up all over again. There's kind of this weird element of, we've found other planets in the universe that look like they could have been our planet. And you kind of get this idea that all planets evolve, develop life, which eventually destroys it and dies. So you kind of have this infinite loop of everyone making the same mistake. It's pretty interesting.
I could see that. I'm supposedly the science fiction person in this podcast, but I actually don't know that one. And sounds like I should read it. Sounds like we should maybe do an episode on it. In fact, but right now I'm actually going a little old school. I'm reading a collection of Sherlock Holmes short stories, which I've never actually read before.
Mm-hmm.
I've only seen adaptations on TV and in movies, and
the Robert Downey Jr. version, by the way,
it's pretty good. It's actually a pretty good adaptation. Surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, you would think.
And I heard on NPR or from some other nerd source the character House from the TV show House was based on Sherlock Holmes. And yeah, if you can get past the second page of a Sherlock Holmes story and not figure that out without someone telling you, then you have never seen House before. The other thing that I'm reading right now is also probably in the category of nerd books, because it's all about foreign policy and such. It's Year 501, The Conquest Continues by Noam Chomsky.
Oh, Noam.
Yes, which is also a tad out of date at this point, because it was written, I think, in 1993 or 1994. There are references to the first Gulf War, but certainly not to 9/11 or the second Gulf War. But if you want to hear a little bit of a different spin on colonialism and how America and her allies have gone about supposedly civilizing the world, then you'll learn some things from this book. And I know that I have a tendency every couple pages to raise my fist at the sky and shout, "They've been lying to us!"
Always good. So, that's what we're reading. You can pick it up, or you can not pick it up, or you could pick up Lord of the Flies and revisit it. Again, if you want to get in touch with us, you should email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com, or shoot us a tweet at novelideaspod on Twitter.
Yeah, that's all we have this week. We're looking forward to hearing from you, and we will see you next time.
Bye.